Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So let's start with an article from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Real People, Finally Finding Peace, Somewhere to Go, How Retiree Danny Patnoid Saved Himself by Saving His Childhood Park. When I was a kid in the 1960s, my family lived just a couple of blocks away from McKinley Park in Tacoma, Washington. My brothers used to take me there, and I was just amazed at the beauty of it. It's 22 acres of nature south of downtown, with streams, trails, and a reflecting pond. We would go sledding there in the winter and slide down hills on cardboard in the summer. But then my parents divorced and we moved to a different part of town. I graduated from high school and got odd jobs and then worked in the beer industry. And as soon as I could, I bought my own place back near McKinley Park. But I had a problem with alcohol. I've fought it my whole life. For many years I was sober, but over 7 years, in my late 40s, I lost almost everything, including the gal and the job. The park was going downhill too, overgrown and dirty. And then in 2010, doctors told me I had prostate cancer. They said to try to quit drinking. After my cancer surgery, I knew I had to do something to keep myself occupied so I wouldn't drink. I was just barely hanging on. One day, I grabbed a bucket, went outside, and started picking up garbage on the street. I ran into my neighbor, Larry, who asked, "Why don't you help me in the park?" So, I started volunteering with Larry, who was working to beautify McKinley Park. The work gave me purpose and relieved my depression. Between that and a 12-step program, I've been able to stay sober, and my prostate cancer has not come back. I volunteered with Larry until he became ill and passed away. Now I continue what he started. When I began at the park, I used to count the used hypodermic needles I was picking up. After I had collected over 5,000 needles, I stopped counting. There was a lot fewer of them now, though. The homeless encampment that used to be all over the park are gone. Whenever I meet someone homeless at the park, I try to find services for them, a place where they can go. I never talk down to them because I've been there. Since I retired in 2013, I've put 1,200 hours a year into the park. People say I saved the park, but the way I look at it, the park saved me. To me, it's a magical place. I never knew that taking care of the park would change my life, but it did. One day at a time. And this was as told to Charles R. Cross. Tacoma, Washington volunteer Danny Patnoid, 65, has been an AARP member for 15 years. Now from AARP The Bulletin, let's look at this article. It's a Q&A by William McRaven. It is equally as difficult to forgive as it is to be courageous. William McRaven is the Navy SEAL Admiral who oversaw the Osama bin Laden raid. On leadership and the wisdom of doing small things right. You gave a commencement address about making your bed every day that got 100 million views online. Why is that so important? When I was training to become a SEAL, we got inspected every morning. The instructor would invariably pull out a quarter and flip it into the air to see if you had pulled the blanket and sheet taut enough to make the coin bounce. Finally, I got up the courage to ask a chief petty officer why, and he said, "Well, it's pretty simple. If you can't even make your bed to exacting standards, how are we ever going to trust you to lead a complex SEAL mission? Learn to do the little things right, and you'll learn to do the big things right." Do you still make your bed? Every single day. My wife and I have a big king-size bed, and we used to make the bed together. But after I gave that speech, she said, "Oh, no, big boy, it's all yours now." In your new book, The Wisdom of the Bullfrog, you talk about an important lesson seals learn. Think first of others. I'd like to tell the story of Sergeant Major Chris Ferris, my right-hand man in Afghanistan. One day, I did a Zoom call with my doctor, and she told me I'd been diagnosed with cancer. I needed to go back to the States immediately to have my spleen removed and start chemotherapy. Your military career is probably over, she added. When I got back to my office, Chris was there, and he noticed something wasn't right. After I told him, he said, "Okay, boss, we've got the morning briefing coming up, and you need to be there. The troops are counting on you." So we did the video teleconference with thousands of our team members around the world. And before I could say anything, Chris asked someone to put up a list of the people who had been injured in combat the night before. Then he gave me a look, and I knew what it meant. I had a problem, but it paled in comparison to what these young men and women were going through. That was exactly the right thing to tell me at the time. It helped put my minor problem in perspective. Tell me about guarding Saddam Hussein. Some of the guys who worked for me captured Saddam in 2003, and we had to hold on to him for about 30 days. He was pompous and arrogant when we captured him, but as the days went on, he no longer had his palaces, his generals, and his handmaidens. He just became a pathetic old man. I contrast him with Nelson Mandela, who spent almost 30 years incarcerated. But because Mandela had this great strength of character, he came out of prison as strong and maybe even stronger than when he went in. Bullies like Saddam always seem to collapse when you confront them. But men of integrity like Mandela can withstand the terrible inequities of life. Within about 4 or 5 days, you could tell that Saddam was not a leader. When you take away all the trappings, that's when you find out the character of an individual. You led the raid that killed Osama bin Laden. What did that experience teach you? Leadership lessons from the people I worked with. One was Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA at the time. The CIA had done an absolutely incredible job finding bin Laden, and it could have taken all the credit for getting him. But Panetta knew that my organization was a better fit for the commando raid, so he put his ego aside and made us part of the team. And as one big team, we were all successful. The other person was President Obama. Watching him on this one was a master class in executive leadership. He was always willing to hear everyone's position. He welcomed challenging viewpoints. What was the mission's greatest challenge? With this raid, we never knew for certain that it was bin Laden. The president really had to gamble tremendously. The British Special Air Service has a motto, "Who dares win?" Who dares wins. Good leaders tend to do things that are safe and reasonable, and there's nothing wrong with that. But great leaders take risks. They're not afraid to fail if they think the risk is worth the gain. You had to ask forgiveness from a man whose son was accidentally killed in Afghanistan. The mission was all a horrible misunderstanding and as tragic as it gets. We had inadvertently killed the man's son and maybe one of his daughters. I knew that I owed the family a sincere apology. Before I met with the father, I asked an Afghan general who worked for us how this man would respond if I asked for forgiveness. "He will absolutely forgive you," the general said, "because it will not only relieve your burden, it will relieve his burden as well." How did it unfold? There were about 20 Afghans packed into a long banquet hall, and I was one of only 2 Americans. The man looked heartbroken, and another son was next to him with hatred in his eyes. I stepped forward and said, "I'm a soldier, but I also have children. I know how difficult this would be for me if this tragedy happened to my children." Then I asked the man for forgiveness. As I watched him, the hatred and tension began to lower. Finally, his son said to me, "We accept your apology, and we will have no more hatred in our hearts for you." That had to be a heartbreaking moment. I don't know if I could have been as forgiving. I often say courage is the most important quality. It guarantees all the rest. But it is equally as difficult to forgive as it is to be courageous. And this interview was by Hugh Delahunty. Now, also from AARP, the Bulletin, let's look at this article. Social Security must be protected and kept strong. AARP will defend your indispensable benefit. We'll read the sidebar article first. Securing Social Security, AARP stands by these four principles. Any process looking at Social Security options should be transparent and provide substantial opportunities for input from the public and outside organizations. Any proposals must reflect today's changing workforce and the dynamic economic and demographic shifts that make it hardest for workers to save enough for retirement. All legislation to adjust Social Security should go through the regular order of congressional business and be done outside the context of debt reduction. We oppose any attempt by Congress to sunset Social Security, so it has to be reenacted every few years. That would gravely threaten the benefits earned over a lifetime. Now for the article. A big takeaway from this year's State of the Union speech is the rare display of bipartisan support for Social Security. In the days after the February 7th address, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York, and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat, New York, joined President Joe Biden in making it clear that cuts to Social Security are off the table in the debt ceiling debate. That's good news for the 66 million Americans who depend on this vital program each month. An overwhelming majority of Americans, Democrats, Republicans, and independents alike, agree Social Security should never be used as a budget bargaining chip. It is an earned benefit and a sacred promise that must be kept. Although the program has been a great success, steps must be taken to ensure its solvency for the long term. This is a complex issue that cannot be resolved by simply raising the retirement age or reducing benefits, as some have suggested. Strengthening Social Security requires an unprecedented degree of collaboration between our elected officials and the American people. There's an old saying, nothing about us without us. After working their whole lives and paying into the program with each paycheck to earn their benefits, older Americans and their families deserve a say in any changes to Social Security. AARP is in the thick of this fight, and we have made our position clear. It is hard to overstate the importance and impact of Social Security. For most people over retirement age, Social Security is their largest source of income. For 14% of those people, it is nearly the entire income. The average retired worker benefit is $1,779 a month, reflecting the 8.7% cost of living adjustment that took place in January. As the nation remains mired in a period of high inflation, the need for Social Security is growing. Prices for basic necessities continue to rise. Many Americans have little or no savings. People are living longer, and employer-paid pensions are increasingly scarce. In addition, more seniors are single and lack family support. Given these realities, we must keep Social Security strong. Americans should be able to trust that our leaders will safeguard the hard-earned Social Security benefits they have paid into and earned throughout their lives. Young people should have the confidence they will receive the benefits they're earning now through their hard work, just as parents and grandparents have done. Social Security has never missed a payment, and AARP will never stop fighting to protect and strengthen this indispensably earned benefit, so you, your family, and future generations of Americans can continue to count on it. as millions of Americans have for the past 88 years. And here's a brief item, Medicare Made Easy. Is it true that every Medicare enrollee is entitled to vaccines for free this year? Not quite. A provision in the Inflation Reduction Act that passed last August says that beginning in 2023, adult vaccines recommended by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are free for Medicare beneficiaries with prescription drug coverage. This applies to enrollees who have a standalone Part D prescription drug plan or who have a Medicare Advantage plan that includes drug coverage. But not every Medicare beneficiary has such a plan. According to a 2022 report, 9% of Medicare participants are not enrolled in a Part D plan. That means 1 in 11 Medicare enrollees might need to pay for certain vaccines. Just a reminder, you may not think you need Part D when you first sign up for Medicare because you don't take many or any prescription drugs. But as with most types of insurance, you get it because someday you might need it. If you don't enroll in a Part D plan when you are first eligible for Medicare, you'll be subject to a late enrollment penalty if you decide to sign up for a later plan. Does Medicare pay for an ambulance? Medicare Part B covers the cost of an ambulance in emergency situations if the trip meets certain criteria. The ambulance is medically necessary. It is the only safe way to transport the patient. It is going to a location approved by Medicare, such as a hospital, skilled nursing facilities, or back home after care. The transportation company meets Medicare standards. The destination is the nearest qualifying facility that can treat you. Note that original Medicare enrollees will be responsible for 20% of the Medicare-approved ambulance charge. Supplemental Medigap policies often will cover that. Medicare Advantage plans also cover ambulances. Check with your plan to find out what your share of the cost will be. Now, I'm going to look at this article entitled Your Health, and it's a little bit confusing, but I'll do my best. Here, where are my keys? A simple game to help you figure out what's behind many brain lapses. Memory glitches, like misplacing your keys, can make you ask yourself, is something going wrong with my brain? While only a doctor should attempt a serious answer to that question, this quiz can help you better understand when so-called senior moments are a natural consequence of our stress-filled lives, a symptom of a physical or emotional health issue, or a potential sign of cognitive decline that should get checked out at the doc. So the next time you have a frustrating brain lapse, answer these questions and consult your doctor for info and guidance. Who knows? By following this chart, you may even find your keys. Now, there's articles at the bottom, so I'm going to do those first. It's probably just a blip. What likely happened? If you're inattentive or multitasking, your brain may not record where you put your keys. So when you go into the file cabinet of your mind to pull out the info again, there's nothing there, explains Joel Salinas, MD, assistant professor of neurology and dementia specialist at NYU Langone Health. It's probably nothing, but if this type of forgetfulness gradually happens more frequently so that it becomes a pattern, then see your doctor for an evaluation. It could be unhealthy routines. The whereabouts of your keys don't stand a chance against stress or a chronic lack of sleep, says Carla Persimito, MD, professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of California, San Francisco. For older adults, sleep less than 4 hours a night or more than 10 is associated with lower cognitive function and a higher risk of cognitive decline. And stress also impairs the brain's ability to pluck info from your memory bank. Take this as a sign you need to sleep more and stress less. It could be something unrelated. Sleep disorders, anxiety, isolation, and other physical or psychological conditions can mimic the beginnings of cognitive decline. If you feel as if you're spending a sufficient time asleep in bed, but you're still tired during the day, get an evaluation for sleep apnea. If your mood is in decline, talk to your doctor. Lastly, check your meds. A wide array of drugs can pose long and short-term risks of cognitive impairment. It could be a warning sign. Repeating yourself or having increasing difficulty doing everyday tasks may be a sign of mild cognitive impairment. Get an appointment on the calendar with your primary care physician. Then say, "Hey, doc, I'm not myself lately, and I feel as if I'm just not as sharp. I'm concerned there could be something going on." Ask for an evaluation or a referral to a neurologist, a geropsychologist, or a geriatrician. It's time to see your doctor ASAP. Changes in thinking skills, especially when combined with personality changes, can signal something's askew, as can changes in walking and balance. Your primary care physician is a good place to start, but after an evaluation, your doctor should refer you to a specialist, such as a behavioral neurologist, geriatric psychiatrist, or geriatrician, for a more thorough workup. So I'm just going to go through one or two series of these questions. Have friends or family said that you keep repeating questions, tell the same stories over and over, or have shown some personality changes of late? If no, can you recall relevant details of a recent major event you experienced? Say, who was there or what you did or what you ate, with whom you spoke? No? Well, go see your doctor. But if you answered yes, have you been having balance issues? No. Go to Just a Blip. If it's yes, go see your doctor as soon as possible. Now let's go back to AARP, the magazine, and look at some more real people. The lifeguard who took a 50-year break. To snag his summer job, Eric Greensmith had to swim like a teen. It was my secret. When I decided to try out to be a beach lifeguard, I kept it to myself. 50 years and 40 pounds had added up since the last time I had held the job, and I wasn't sure I could get fit enough to pass the running and swimming tests. In Sea Isle City, the Jersey Shore town where I had worked for 4 summers, starting in 1972, there are no separate tests for lifeguards over 60. You have to be as fit as everyone else. For me, it seemed like it might not be possible. It might be almost laughable. But I wanted to try. I was getting ready to retire from my job as a hospital anesthesiologist, and I wanted a challenge. I changed my diet and intensified my workouts, but I didn't tell anyone why, not even my wife. As I lost the weight over the course of a year, though, I gradually started talking about my goal. No one laughed. Last May, I tried out and made the cut. So that was my summer job last year. I'm not as fast as the teenage guards, I'll be honest. I'm irritated that they can swim and run faster than I can. That used to be me. But what I have lost in physical capacity, I feel like I've picked up in intensity and in judgment. In a way, being an anesthesiologist is a lot like lifeguarding. If things start to go bad in the OR or on the beach, you can preemptively make corrections, like adjusting the patient's anesthetic or moving people away from a riptide. But if things go to hell in a handbasket, you have to jump in and fix it right away, and all eyes are looking at you. I'm planning to try out again this summer. I recently got my license to operate a jet ski for rescues, and I am getting certified as a paramedic. I'm trying to make myself more valuable as an employee if I'm rehired. This would probably be my last season, though. My wife feels it's a bit of self-indulgence, and she's quite right. She doesn't want us to miss out on doing other things because I'm continually going back to the shore, like a lemming. One more summer is our compromise. I just hope I make it. And this was as told to Niam Rowe. Eric Greensmith, 68, is a semi-retired anesthesiologist in Hershey, Pennsylvania. Now back to the bulletin for another problem and its solution. My utility company keeps telling me to upgrade to a smart thermostat. Could this really save me money? Probably, but the amount depends on the thermostat you're replacing. Smart thermostats can be controlled with a phone, smart speaker, or computer. Use them to program your home temperature based on day, time, and whether you're at home. If you're replacing an old mercury or bimetal thermostat, you'll see greater savings than if you're upgrading a programmable digital thermostat. But there are other benefits to a smart thermostat, including the ability to adjust the temperature when you are away and receive alerts if there are operating issues. Our tap water increasingly tastes and smells bad, but I don't want to use bottled water. Tap water in America is by and large safe to drink, but yes, it can vary widely by community in its mineral content and taste. That's why I always suggest using charcoal water filters, which are portable and perfect for adding to water bottles. There are also many charcoal-filtered water pitchers. Opt for glass over plastic if you can. Both options help cut out odors and any lingering taste from dissolved minerals. Many new refrigerators offer built-in filtered water as well. Don't like the smell of the water in the shower or clothes washer as well? Whole house filtering systems generally run $1,000 and up, plus installation, and are much more compact than in decades past. My plumber wants to replace our old water heater with a tankless unit, but I'm dubious. A tankless unit heats water up on demand. It doesn't waste energy maintaining a reserve of hot water in a tank. The efficiency gain can be in the order of about 10% if you use lots of water, say 80-plus gallons per day. If you use about 40 gallons of hot water per day, the savings could be above 30%. But if you're serious about lower energy costs, consider an electric heat pump water heater. That can be 3 times more efficient than what you have today. There are days when my attic peaks at 125 degrees. Is this dangerous for my house? As long as the construction materials in your roof are rated for that temperature and applied correctly, such temperatures don't pose any danger to your home. In most cases, an attic fan is unnecessary. If you're concerned that hot air in the attic is affecting the rest of your house, focus on better insulating the attic with 12 to 15 inches of blown cellulose to achieve an insulation rating of R49. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.